Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Drew. 35, 30.
Rosen intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Good afternoon, everybody. The Giants coming off their first preseason win of the year. They defeat the Jacksonville Jaguars at MetLife Stadium. And Howard, a nice win. A lot to talk about in the game. We are taking your calls again at 201-939-4513. Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. Howard, let's get right into the game here. No reason to waste any time before we get to the phone calls. Let's start with what we saw from the first teams on offense and on defense first. Obviously, I think you would have liked to see a little bit more production from that first team offense and a couple of opportunities where Odell Beckham had a step, was open, and him and Eli Manning just couldn't connect.
Well, you know, a couple things you got to look at. And I know that everybody keeps talking about how Eli was missing Odell, but Odell had some opportunities to catch the ball there,
and he is getting
some extra attention. And that's the thing he's going to get to look for the rest of the year. You can't be the guy with the catch of the year, the play of the year, to be the guy that's a Pro Bowler and only playing, you know, three quarters of a season and not expect everybody, every coach on every team to say, we got to pay some attention to this guy and we want to make sure if he can do it, we want to make sure he's tough enough to do it. And that's what he's going to get over and over and over again.
And we should note that there were no dirty plays by the Jaguars on that game. It was good, clean football a couple times. Beckham, quite frankly, I think anticipated more contact than there actually was on a couple of those passes that were slightly out of his reach. One over the middle specifically, and then you had one on the sideline where I thought he might have pulled back just a little bit.
A little eyes high, Jared. That's all right, though. It's that and it's preseason. So, you know, you don't want to risk, kind of like you saw Sam Bradford and T. Sizzle kind of taking a little bit of a cheap shot at him. You don't want some guy that's a little overzealous to take a shot at you for no reason. So I believe when the season starts and live bullets are happening, I believe he'll be fine.
Absolutely right. And then, of course, the little thing with him and the other safety, no flags, no penalties, no harm, no foul.
Yeah.
But just something to keep an eye on moving forward. I thought a good thing, though, Howard, for the first-team offense, I thought we saw some good progress from the first-team offensive line. I thought they had a couple nice runs on that second drive. Eli Manning wasn't under the type of pressure he was in the first preseason game. Jeff Schwartz played a lot of snaps, and I think you started to see what could be that first-string offensive line take form a little bit.
You did see a little bit of it. I think you're still waiting to see exactly how it all pans out. You know, I think week three or four of the season, you'll have a great idea of how well they're doing. I think the big, you know, first-round pick Flowers, the big giant guy standing out there.
He's a big fella, huh?
He looked good. I thought I liked his attitude. He got after guys. If someone got by him, he fought to the very end. He played, whistle to the whistle every play. And then Schwartz got in. First play, he flatbacked somebody. So that's pretty exciting.
No doubt about it. He liked to have Jeff Schwartz back there on the field, and I think Tom Coughlin is trying to figure out how he wants to configure the right side of that line. You saw Marshall Newhouse at tackle. You saw John Jerry at tackle. You saw Jeff Schwartz out there at right tackle. You saw Schwartz and Jerry, obviously, at right guard as well. How do you think that right side will eventually be best configured, Howard, so the Giants get their best performance out there on the field and run and pass?
Now, I have no earthly idea because, you know, the thing that you think about mostly is this Schwartz is out there playing that guard position you want him to be. But the thing is, the guy who has the most trouble is the tackle. When you get a left-handed rusher over there on you, you know, you can get a guy that can actually make a lot of plays or a guy that can go from side to side. He can be a left rusher or a right rusher. He's just looking for the weakest point. In a lot of offenses, that tackle, the right tackle, is the weakest point. So you got to get a guy out there that can stand up. You know, Pugh did a great job, you know, in the last couple of years out there. Now you move him inside, you got to find a guy that's going to be equal to what the effort, the ability, and the results that Pugh gave you.
Well, then let me ask you this question. I think my logical next question is, out of those three guys, which one do you think is the best right tackle?
I don't want to give you an answer right now.
That's fair.
You know, the reason why is because it's just not enough evidence.
And that's fair.
You know, you can't go into a game getting one series or two series and find out what the evidence of a play is, because it's like anything else. If you throw the fastball 10 times in a row, you know, about the eighth or ninth one, it'll be over your head. So you don't really get to see that a lot with the tackle position. You got to have guys go and see a lot of different looks, a lot of different guys in front of them, a lot of different type of guys. You may have a a big burly guy in front of you. You might have a guy that's quick. You need to see all of that. And right now, we just haven't seen. We've seen it looks good against a run, but let's see what happens in the pass.
Well, I don't want to lead off with the injuries, but it's obviously a big story, so we got to get to it. And we'll start with the big name, and that's John Beeson. He was diagnosed with a sprained knee coming off of that game. The Giants are calling him week to week. John Beeson says, I will be ready for that first regular season game. I don't see an MD after the John Beeson's name. So Tom Coughlin's being a little bit more cautious the way he's talking about the injury. You know, John Beeson's a guy that's fought through injuries before Howard. Very important to this defense. How much does it hurt him now in terms of being ready for that first game, dealing with the sprained knee? And I'm not going to ask if you think he's going to be back because, you know, what do we mean? You know, we haven't seen MRIs. Who knows?
But I tell you this, that, you know, if you have a foot injury, it's devastating because you can't really run. You can't really plant. It's hard to get any power. You are really, really hindered. But when you have a knee injury, for some reason or another, you can get around it. You can put a brace on it. You can do a lot of different things because if it's not pain, as long as it's not hyperextending or flexing out of position, you can actually play with it. I played, you know, a whole season with a knee that was banged up. So you can basically get around it. The thing with Beeson is he wants to be full speed in the team. The Giants want him full speed the entire time. So what they're looking for and what they're hoping for is that he's going to show up, 100% when he comes back.
No question about it. Luckily, they have a veteran like Jameel McClain who can step in, knows the defense. He knows what he's doing. Another young guy, Uwani Unga, showed something in that first preseason game. He can step in and do a little bit. And we saw JT Thomas play one heck of a game at weak side linebacker. Remember, he played his best game of the year last year on the Jaguars against the Giants. Now he's going against his former team, and he shows up again big time.
I think JT Thomas has a nose for the ball. I think you know, when you have a guy out there that has a nose for the ball, that's what you really want. He does a great job finding his way around the field. Kind of reminded me of a Jesse Armstead kind of player, kind of getting to the ball, playing off blocks, taking the right angle off of a blocker because he's not the biggest guy in the world.
He's fast, though.
But he's fast. Yeah. So if you can get your hands on him, you should be able to stop him, but he's getting the correct angle every time when he's coming in.
All right, now let's safety position. You know, this seems to happen with the Giants. You come into a season, you have a question at a position, and obviously there were questions all offseason about the Giants at safety, and now all of a sudden the first couple weeks of camp, you have three or four guys go down with injuries. You're basically down to, let's see, I think five safeties down on the roster. You got Cooper Taylor, Nat Burhey, who both the Giants hope will be back at practice this week, along with second round pick, Landon Collins, mm-hmm. who they hope will be back at practice again this week. Also, Brandon Merriweather, the free agent, and then Justin Howie, the young undrafted free agent they brought in a couple weeks into camp. Howard, the safety position, give me your bullet point. How do you look at it right now?
Well, what I've noticed is, you think about this, the last couple of years you had Roll out there, right? He's directing and doing everything, and you see a lot of pass breakups with Roll. You don't see all of a sudden all these big hits. I think that's what people think of when they think of safety. They keep thinking back to running a lot in a big hit. Well,
Steve Atwater, those guys. Yeah.
That's been legislated out of football, kind of. So you need guys that can break up the play. They call it pass defended. You know, knock the ball down. So what I've seen in the past was a pass defended. What I'm seeing now with the Giants is tackles. Now, the thing that when you're watching a game and you're trying to figure out how your safeties are playing, if you see them with a lot of tackles in the passing game, they're not defending the pass.
Because their receiver's catching the football.
That's right.
Or, frankly, if they have a lot of tackles in the running game, it means your defensive line and linebackers aren't bringing down the running back.
Well, unless he's playing up and he's that fourth or fifth backer.
Right.
So what I'm looking at right now and as the safeties and Spags defense is, somebody said, maybe they're not letting guys get behind them. I said, no, I think they're still learning exactly where they need to be on the field. When they learn where they need to be on the field, there'll be pass breakups because these guys are athletes. They can get to the right spot. They just need to know exactly where they need to be. The corners are doing a great job, knocking the balls down. They're right there, pass defense, having their hands on balls. Look like they're going to intercept it. But the safeties are at the point right now where they're, you know, back there, they're kind of in charge of what's going on, how everybody's lining up, and they're still trying to get the whole thing down. And that's just my opinion from what I'm looking at.
And you didn't like the fact that you saw Merriweather let a receiver get behind him on that one post route. Now, it wasn't completed because the corner was there, but Merriweather did not take the right angle on that play. Again, his strength is against the run. You like to see him get a little better at that.
Well, you know, he will be playing up. He'll be that strong safety guy. But that's the thing. That's the knock on Merriweather. He is a beast against the run, but in the pass game, you go after the strong safety when you're trying to run routes.
All right, and the other thing I want to talk about, too, are the two guys specifically got hurt. Justin Curry with that broken ankle. He's somebody that I know Dave Merritt was happy with, was limited in terms of not being a top-end huge athlete, but he, like you were just talking about, knew where he had to be on the field, was a smart player, so that's a loss. And then Bennett Jackson, Howard, a guy that came back last year, had a knee injury, had an ankle injury, missed the whole year, a rookie draft pick, really seemed to be getting into a good groove at safety, was playing a little nickel corner too. It's just a terrible injury for that kid to have to deal with for a second straight year.
I mean, you know, again, we think about this, and the whole league, it's not just the Giants, the whole league is suffering.
Jordy Nelson.
Yeah, everybody suffers from injuries, and people are wondering why. And someone asked me to give my best acknowledgement of what I think it is.
All right, Dr. Cross, what do you got?
It's not doctors. Just think of this. If I'm a boxer, I have to spar in order to learn how to get hit, what to look for in a fight.
Sure.
You have to have some contact. You have to get used to, you know, the more you spar, the better you are in the fight when you come up, because you're getting used to what you're going to face. Your muscles are getting used to it. You're calloused where you need to be calloused, and you're ready. If I'm a pitcher in baseball, and I'm throwing 90 miles an hour, I get an injury, I don't get to come right back on the field. They send me down to double A or triple A and give me a few weeks of rehabs, of throwing the ball that hard again in an actual game. I think that the football, the NFL legislated practice in that contact and that kind of atmosphere out of the game.
So you're basically saying that baseball spring training provides their players a more realistic preparation for the season than a football training camp would.
I think that more than that, just from, you know, the OTAs all the way up to football, you got to go full speed sometime.
Right.
You got to get knocked down sometime. Jordy Nelson hurt his knee. No one touched him. He just made a move.
He landed and turned.
Yeah, because that's something that you're not used to doing at full speed. You got to get used to it. You got to get your body used to it.
Now, the other thing that I think it is sometimes, too, is that, you know, people say now guys are all bigger, stronger, faster, which, you know, in a lot of cases isn't true, because I think a lot of guys from Yara were actually bigger based on the position they played. I mean, you're bigger than a lot of the offensive tackles that are playing now, and you were tight end, just as an example. But I feel like now, please correct me if I'm wrong, that these guys do so much muscle training, trying to get larger, you know, it's so much work, and they don't have a lot of off time in the off season. I feel like maybe not in Europe, but maybe the era right before yours, you know, guys would take 2 or 3 months off, and they'd relax, and they'd let their bodies recover. And I almost think like these guys now, you know, their muscles are so developed, and we saw this with baseball players back in the day when steroids were around, where the guys get so big, they tear tendons and ligaments because their muscles are, you know, so advanced and so strong that the connective tissues, the tendons, the ligaments, and all that stuff can't quite handle the extra stress that's put on them by the increased strength.
I see a lot of fat guys tearing pec muscles and bicep muscles, so I'm just going to have to disagree. You don't really see, like, really fit,
again,
cut guys. You see a lot of big, heavy dudes.
I don't know anything about it. That is my layman's theory, whatever.
I just think that it's, you know, you have to get conditioned to,
right,
you know, if you want to hit a fastball. If I put you in a cage right now and it thinks throwing 80, and it's going to throw 20 pitches. By the 20th pitch, you're going to be putting the bat on the ball.
No question.
Right? So that's what's happening, and you got to get used to it so you can be prepared to actually go through it. And, again, they'll never do it. They're never going to go back to the old days. But you got to find a way. If it were me and I was collective bargaining the last time, I'd have bargained for like 10 more guys in camp.
And by the way, what I said there had nothing to do with the Giants specifically. I was talking all sports around the entire spectrum. Absolutely. 201-939-4513. Let's get to your calls. We got a full bank. Let's start with Colby down in Miami. He wants to talk about one of the wide receivers that had a couple catches in the game on Saturday night. Colby, what's going on?
Good evening, guys. Good evening.
What's up, Colby?
Hey.
Well, I want to talk about James Jones. Now, you know, you heard about Jordy Nelson on the Packers. He's out with the ACL tear. Do you think there'd be any possibility that we trade James Jones to the Packers for maybe a third-round pick or something like that?
Wait, hold on. Colby, let me ask you something, Colby. How long was James Jones available as a free agent to sign for a little more than a veteran's minimum contract?
Honestly, I have no idea.
James Jones did not sign with the Giants until right before training camp. So he was literally sitting there on the street for 3 or 4 months. The Packers could have signed him anytime they wanted. And I know Jordy Nelson wasn't hurt then. That's fine. But you're not going to go around and trade a third-round pick for a guy that you could have had for a basic veteran minimums contract for 3 or 4 months. Now, are the Packers going to be in the market? Sure, but frankly, I think they're going to try out one of their young guys. Davante Adams had a couple big games last year, a draft pick of theirs last season. They're going to try him. What's the other kid's name? Jarvis?
I think,
yeah, that's the kid's name, right? He's another guy that they drafted last year in the 7th round that they want to give a run to. So, look, I think the Packers will try their in-house options first, and when you get closer to the season, they know James Jones knows their system. If they want to try to, you know, think about something then, but to think about 3rd-round picks for that, I just don't think it's going to happen.
There are a lot of guys out on the street that are younger, too, that you know, are just around, right around the edge of trying to make plays. They're going to come in, that they're going to get a shot that you just don't know. You may find another – For no better term, another David Tyree on your special teams that never really played offense, but he might get a chance to come out and play for your team. You got a guy like that sitting in your bank, all of a sudden he shows up and he can play. So it's not as easy as you think as you're getting Jones. Jones is a nice receiver. He catches the ball with his hands. He does a lot of good things.
Jeff Janis, by the way, was the guy's name. Jeff Janis. I was close.
But what happens is that you want a guy that's going to contribute in a lot of ways to the team, not just, you know, a receiver. There are no Jordy Nelsons out there looking to come back, unless Randy Moss all of a sudden decides he wants to come back.
Yeah. You got anything else for us, Colby?
No, I think that's it. I don't know if it's going to be a 3rd round, but maybe something else. But thanks for taking my call, guys.
Hey, thanks for calling, Colby. I appreciate it, man. 201-939-4513. They also drafted a young guy, Ty Montgomery, this year, too. So that's two draft picks over the last 2 years that they've had in-house. I'm sure they're going to want to use those young guys first. And look, they still have Randall Cobb. I mean,
they have 3 or 4 guys.
Randall Cobb's pretty darn good. And they can run the football that he Lacy, too.
Yeah, they can run the football. They can definitely run the football.
They got plenty of guys in that team. And, of course, having our Aaron Rodgers kind of lifts the level of all those wide receivers a little bit, don't you?
And their tight ends are good receivers. They got a lot of good guys.
Yeah, they think Richard Rodgers, one of their younger tight ends, can step in and play pretty well this year. 201-939-4513. Let's go back to the calls. Mike's out on Long Island. Mike, what's going on?
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Hi, Mike.
Very good.
Good, good. I just want to talk a little bit about the state of the Giants. Okay, you know, it's very depressing. And by the way, I want you to know there probably isn't a better Giant fan in this world than me. Okay,
self-proclaimed. I like it.
You know, I follow everything. I'm on the internet every day seeing what's going on.
Okay.
But the state of the Giants right now is very, very depressing with all these injuries. You know, and if I, you know, and you guys know just as well as me, but just let me mention them. Beeson's going to be out for a while. There's hardly any safeties left. And if you bring in a safety, he's not going to be trained properly to play for a while. Cornerbacks, we have 2. God forbid someone gets hurt there, then we're going to be in bad shape. The only strengths on our team, I think, are in running back, wide receiver, and quarterback. Quarterback, obviously, being the most important. Okay. Talking about the defensive line, you know, we have to admit this, question marks there. We don't really know what we have, you know, JPP being out, whatnot. So here's my question. If we have a mediocre season, okay, and, you know, it's going to take a lot to overcome a mediocre season. What I mean by that is, if you're a mediocre team, you're going to always get mediocre draft picks. And mediocre draft picks means that you're going to remain mediocre.
Well, I mean, now, in fairness, Mike, if you want to call the Giants mediocre last year, who'd they get in the 1st round of the draft?
Well, they got Odell Beckham. Hey, listen.
He's not mediocre. He's not mediocre, though. You know what I mean?
No, but you have to admit, we were very, very fortunate to get that kind of a guy at that point.
No, but Mike, look, you're right. The higher you pick, the better player you have a chance at getting, sure. But, I mean, where was J.J. Watt picked in the draft?
He was picked really
I think in the end of the 1st round, middle 1st round.
J.J. Watt was picked, I believe, around number 12 or 13. So, I mean, no matter where you're picking, if you pick the right guy, you can find a good player.
But here's the thing, and I know what you're saying, but this is not the NBA. We're not going to throw games necessarily to try to get better picks. I watch the games myself, and towards the end of the season, if the season isn't going well, I sit around and wonder, like, okay, I start ranking draft positions, and I do it all the time.
No, he does. Trust me.
And I do it with every team. Yep. I'm like, okay, so I know who's drafting here. I know who's drafting there. And I'm looking at guys that could be coming into the league in my own little ridiculous way, trying to figure out who's going to get who and who's going, you know, selfishly because I'm an Alabama guy.
Yeah, Mike, trust me. All I heard from Howard the end of last year was that, hey, man, do you think the Giants would draft Amari Cooper if they got a pick at the top 10?
Listen, guys, me too. But here's my question.
Go ahead.
After saying everything I said about being mediocre,
yes.
And mediocre kills me because it's hard to get anywhere that way, you know. I was thinking that, and I know you guys are not going to agree with me.
Oh, boy, you want to get rid of Eli Manning, anyway. Don't you?
Eli Manning.
Oh, boy, here we go.
Who I love him, okay? He's a great quarterback. He's 34 years old. Why don't we franchise him next year? We have plenty of money on the cap. Franchise him. So if someone wants to take him and they want to give us two first-round picks for him, so be it. How much leverage does that give us in a draft when you have a first round, two first-round picks and two first-round picks in the next year?
So let me help you out with that. So let's do this. Let's say Eli plays till he's 40. That's 6 years, right? Roughly.
Six or seven seasons.
Six
yes.
or seven more seasons. Eli Manning is a once-in-era quarterback. Him, Ben Roethlisberger, the once-in-era. Two Super Bowls.
Right.
Two everything. Aaron Rodgers is one of those guys. Peyton Manning is one of those
Brady,
guys.
Obviously.
Brady is one of those guys. But out of all those guys, Eli's the only guy who hasn't missed any games. So what
I
you,
know that.
But
hey, listen,
just
listen,
hold, wait,
I
wait, wait.
Guy,
I know, but just
but
hold on.
He's going to cause us to be mediocre.
But let me help you out just so you can understand. So if you have that guy pulling the trigger and you trade that guy away and I give you three first-round picks, you're not going to replace that guy.
And here's the thing, Mike. Even with those three first-round picks, in all seriousness, in those three first-round picks, what do you think the percent chances you'll find Eli's replacement that'll be as good as Eli with one of those two or three first rounds?
Because the guy who's touching the ball is the guy who's most important to your team.
And Mike.
Right. And I agree with all that. But here is the other question. We don't really – and you know something? Nobody knows what we have with Nassib, right? The guy doesn't even get a chance to play. I mean, even
plays
games
the preseason.
When we're losing last year by a lot, they don't put him in, okay? Or if we're winning by a lot, put him in. Why don't we see who he is?
Why would you – okay, so if you're losing by a lot, I could understand maybe possibly taking Eli out to protect him. But Eli's been durable, so that's why they haven't taken him out. But you watch Nassib in preseason, and you're watching him get – whole halves, a whole he'll play almost the entire game in the fourth preseason game. Won't you make your you know evaluation from that? Won't you look at him and watch, see if you see something that's so great that's going to be like, you know what, we got a guy that can play. It just doesn't work that way. If he was, you know, Mecklenburger, who's down in Tennessee,
yeah,
it'd be a big difference. A guy who was going to be a first round pick, a high first round pick, and blows his knee out before his season ends, and then he can't really function. Unfortunately for him, he's the guy that teams will be drafting for and trying to figure out if they can get him.
Yeah.
Everybody else, there's not a lot of guys out there. They're, you know, look at Washington. They got three guys that are starters, and none of them are really particularly good.
Thanks for the call, Mike. We appreciate it, bud.
Hey, thank you very much, guys.
Hey, thanks for calling in, Mike, and thanks for listening. We appreciate you being a big-time fan. And here's the other thing I want to say, too. I get what he's saying. First-round picks are great. You want to start a rebuild, I understand that. Look at all these teams that have been hunting and pecking for a franchise quarterback for a decade. I mean, throw in the Jets. I mean, the Jets now have now used two first-round picks on quarterbacks over the last
– Buffalo.
I guess Sanchez was first drafted in 2007, right? So that's the last 8-9 years. The Bills have rolled out E.J. Manuel. I'm trying to think of who their failed first-round pick was before E.J. Manuel.
I have no idea. And the Raiders.
The name's escaping me. The Tennessee Titans still haven't replaced Steve McNair.
Mm-mm.
The Oakland Raiders still haven't replaced their last good quarterback, which I – boy, goodness.
Yeah, that's how bad. That's how far
Todd
back.
Todd Marinovich?
No,
I mean, we're going back a long
Gannon,
way.
Rich Gannon.
Rich Gannon. There,
there you go.
When they went to the Super Bowl, Rich Gannon. Absolutely right. So they're still trying to replace that guy. The Panthers – they have Cam Newton, obviously. That's worked out well for them. But the Redskins, I mean, look at Gus Frerotte, Heath Shuler, Jason Campbell, RG3, Kirk Cousins was another high draft pick that they have. They're going through guys.
Philadelphia's on their like fifth quarterback.
How long did it take for the Dolphins to replace Dan Marino until they found Tannehill?
And again, just so he knows this and understands this, think about the guys who are getting paid. Tannehill got paid.
Andy Dalton
got paid.
Jay Cutler.
And Jay Cutler got paid. You got three guys that got paid that can't win the big game. Now, the jury's out on Tannehill because he's in the league with
Brady. Young kid.
But the other guys, you got to figure out when can you go to a guy and say, like, hey, I need you to do this so we can win. Then that's what everybody's waiting on. Can I get a guy that I can go to? A guy like a Russell Wilson who no one knew that this guy was going to be able to manage the field the way he's managing it. He's a good player. I don't know if you had to throw 40 times, could he do it?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Now, I don't think he can do that.
Could he do what the Giants have had to ask Eli to do the last couple of years with a struggling defense, a struggling offensive line,
Forget about that.
A running game that doesn't work?
Let's make them healthy everywhere. And no run, but, you know, average running game. And you ask him to throw the ball 35 to 40 times a game. He can't do it.
The interceptions.
He just can't do it. He's not Drew Brees. You need a lot of receivers around him to make that happen. He can't do it.
All right, 201-939-4513. Enoch is in Philadelphia. Enoch, what's going on, man?
How you doing today, sir?
Doing well. What's going on?
Good. I was just listening to the last caller. That dude is funny. I don't think we should trade Eli Manning at all because Eli Manning is the heart of that team. And my problem with the whole team is we keep using first round to get offensive line every year, and they get injured. So when we going to build this offensive line? I feel like once we get a good offensive line, we got a great team.
Well, Enoch, in fairness, the three guys who used draft picks on, Justin Pugh, Eric Flowers, and Weston Richburg, those guys have been healthy. Those aren't the guys that have been hurt. Those guys have played.
Those are the guys that are playing. To build a great offensive line, you're going to have to get lucky enough to get some guys that are going to be maybe lower first-round picks, maybe second- and third-round picks, and they show up and they don't ever leave the field. And that's hard to do unless you're just really bad every year and you get a good one every year. And we don't want that to be the case.
Yeah, because I feel like once we get this offensive line good, Eli Manning going to be like the top three quarterbacks. So right now it's Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, and now I put Eli Manning fourth. But my second question was, are we going to get Jason Pierre-Paul back this year, or what's the story on that?
Here's the thing, Enoch. Nobody knows. I mean, Jason Pierre-Paul hasn't said a whole lot. Until he comes in here and gets examined by the Giants and they know what the deal is, people don't really know. I mean, people assume that he's going to be back this year, but as to quote John Mara when he spoke a week ago, we really don't know what his medical condition is yet. So until we have the answer to those questions, Enoch, we really don't know when he's going to be here. And Howard, I'll let you comment further on this, but I think the Giants are planning on life without him because right now you just don't know and you can't count on him.
If it were me, I'd plan on life without him. I would just say that, guys, that I don't know how severe the burn was and everything. But to be removing fingers and breaking joints,
it's not good.
It had to be pretty hot. I'm just glad that he wasn't looking at it when it went off because it would have burned his eyes out probably. He probably had it away from his face.
So my last question is, do we got a replacement if he don't play this season?
There's no regret.
Because I don't know what's the ball for on USC, the African ball, I think he's going to be the replacement, but I don't know. So what y'all think? Do we have a replacement for him?
Thanks, Enoch. Appreciate the call.
I think two or three of the guys together will replace him. I don't think there'll be one guy to replace his production. The thing that people don't realize is that he played so well in the run game. He's like the second or third leading tackler on the team.
Now, he might have been the best run defensive end of football last year.
So he played the whole – he did the Justin Tuck, Michael Strahan thing where he played the run incredibly well. You couldn't just run at him. You couldn't run away from him. That makes him valuable.
And Kerry Wynn is a young guy. He's a good complete player. But, again, JPP is an athletic freak. And, Kerry Wynn can – be in the right place at the right time, work hard, be strong, but he's still not going to have that athletic ceiling maybe that JPP had.
Kerry Wynn's greatest ability is his availability. And I think over the course of a game, he will wear a player down.
Yeah.
He will be able to wear a player down, whereas JPP will wear a guy down early because he's so strong and big and fast. Kerry Wynn's just going to keep coming at you, keep coming at you, and keep coming at you, and it's going to be like, okay, let's go to the other side. This kid is not going anywhere. There's been a lot of good players in the league like that.
Oh, absolutely. And I've said this on the show all season long, Howard. No one was in this building more than Kerry Wynn this offseason. Yeah. He was in here working out in the offseason, doing his thing. Then you have DeMontre Moore. He had a sack in the game the other night. He's a guy you hope that can maybe replace some of that athletic passing, pass rushing ability. And what do you think about him so far this season?
I think that I don't see him enough in the run. I think that I like his pass rush ability. I think he really kicks in another gear when he's doing the pass rush, and you can actually see that. But in the run game, I don't know if he's looking or if he's trying to figure it out or if it just – I just need to see a little bit more of him in the run. Not that he's doing anything wrong. I just like to see
just more activity.
If you can see him in camera shots, if you see him getting up off the pile, if you see like, okay, well that tackle was by 1, 2, 3, and one of those guys was DeMontre Moore. If you see him in the action and getting up out of the mix a little bit more, I know that he's being more active in it. And it's just seeing guys having to turn back inside because, okay, DeMontre Moore's there again. Kind of a little bit like what Kerry Wynn's doing.
Yeah.
Kerry Wynn's affecting the run, and I want to see DeMontre Moore affect the run. In order to do that, you got to be willing to play a full game, and that's – you may not be in there but, you know, two or three plays in a series or three plays in a series. Sometimes you might be in there the entire series from end to end. But if you're able to do it every time you're on the field, you'll be seen a lot more in the camera shot. And when you're looking at him, circle in on the running back when he runs the ball – if it's to the right side or to the left side, look where DeMontre Moore is, and that's when you're going to figure out how well he's doing. If he's, like, cutting down the tackles, grabbing and holding them a lot of times, that means he's affecting the play, and that's what I'd like to see more out of him.
What did you think of Odighizuwa for the two games you saw him, the Giants rookie third-round pick?
I think, you know, against the talent he's playing against, you know, which is equal to the talent that he is, he's doing an incredible job. Now, I want to see him, like, get some reps, like, with some of the bigger guys that he's going to have to go against. Like, the guys that he's going to play against Dallas in the first game of the season. That's going to be his test where, you know, you got to get him involved with some guys that kind of know the footwork, know what they're doing. You got to see the best, you, like Ric Flair. In order to be the best, you got to beat the best.
Quoting Ric Flair.
You got to quote Ric Flair, baby. You got to quote Ric Flair. Woo!
201-939-4513. Jack in Connecticut wants to talk about another Giants draft pick this year. Jack, what's going on?
Hi, I just wanted to discuss how Eric Flowers played this past game. I think he did very well. I think he showed a lot of power and a lot of strength, and that's what we expected. So I kind of wanted to hear, how do you think he played, and I'm a big fan of you, Howard.
Well, thank you very much. Well, yeah. Flowers did a great job, Jack. I mean, you got to understand something. When you're that tall and that long, when you make your move to push a guy, if you just push him a little bit, you've moved him a yard or two out of the way. So that was number one. The thing that I was impressed with, because what we heard so much about is how he's not able to get down and control his height one of the pass sets. He did a good job of it. Guys were rushing into him. They had a long way to go. It's like, take the scenic route to get to the quarterback. You don't get to go straight there. It was like, okay, we're going to see, oh, we're going to go by the park. We're going to drive by the hotel. Oh, we're going to see a few things before we get there. And that's what he's brought to the game.
How are his feet and his technique?
His feet are good. I mean, it's shocking. And, you know, mostly when people think about feet, they're like, can he get back? Can he get back? But he's back, and he's down. And like I said again, it's a long way around.
And once that dude anchors,
I wouldn't worry about him anchoring. It's like, you know, hey, look, just you got a lot of room over here, Eli. You can lean on my side. He's a big guy.
I also want one more question, or not really a question, but a comment. There was a report that just came out about Jason Pierre-Paul saying that he should be back, or he could be back before week one. Ian Rappaport reported it. So I kind of want to hear your thoughts on that as well.
Honestly, I have not seen the report. We don't really know much about it, to be honest with you.
I heard something about it just a few seconds ago on ESPN right before I walked into this. And, again, that's one of those things. You got these Shefty and all these guys. They're calling people constantly trying to find a way to get that last little tidbit of information. I'm not going to say yes or no. If he got it directly from JPP, then he knows more than we do.
Well, again, I have the story up right here, and all I'll do is say what the story says. The Giants obviously don't have any comment on this, and, you know, this is just me reading a story here. Rehab, quote-unquote, progressing very well, according to three sources that Rappaport's reporting. expected to show up at the facility prior to the regular season, but whether he's in uniform is still up in the air. So that's what the story says. And obviously the Giants have no comment on it. That's the story from the three sources Ian Rappaport has here. So we'll see in the coming weeks if it's true or not. Right now, we don't really know a whole lot. So we'll see how everything ends up working out, Jack. All right, we appreciate the call, pal.
Thank you.
Thanks, pal. Christian in New York. Christian, you're up next.
Hey, guys. I just have a statement about the safeties, and I wanted to ask you a question after.
Sure.
I'm actually quite optimistic about them as a unit because right after the draft, the projected starters for safety were Collins and Nat Burhe, and we're getting both of them back this week. And I know Burhe really hasn't done a whole lot this training camp or preseason, but, I mean, it sounded like, you know, he was transitioning well last year but just had a lot of talent ahead of him that was more experienced.
Yeah, remember this, though, too, Christian. Neither one of those guys were in Steve Spagnuolo's defense until this offseason. So both those guys are probably still working on figuring out this defense, and Burhe has barely had more than a handful of full practices in this system, too. So he still has a lot of learning to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, like, looking at the season all together, those two should be able to be pretty solid players. And then Jeremy Miles, I mentioned this to Paul. He played a lot for the Ravens last year and even started a few games, and he played somewhat decent. I mean, even with PFF, he graded out decently. So, I mean, I really don't mind him being a backup or third safety. And then, of course, we know what you got in Brandon Merriweather, but I wanted to ask you guys, once you put someone on the practice squad and someone wants to sign them, do you get first dibs and say, okay, well, I'm signing him instead of you, or do they just get to privately talk with the other team and go?
What happens is that, and John, correct me if I'm wrong, to get on the practice squad, they have to release you first, and then they bring you back to the practice
squad. Yeah, basically what happens, Christian, is that when you want to get put onto the practice squad, you get put through waivers, and every team basically has a chance to claim you when you get put onto that practice squad the first time. Once you're on the practice squad, other teams can sign you off that practice squad, as far as I understand it. I believe that's how the Giants got a couple of their players last year, when there were injuries in the secondary, and I think in the backfield as well. Whether or not they have to notify the team who has the guy in the practice squad that they're talking to him is going to sign him.
I would definitely think they.
I would think that they have to notify him, but I'm not sure if there's a, you know, right of first refusal type of thing in there where there's an official, well, this team has a chance to match or anything like that. Because quite frankly, if the team wanted the guy in their active roster, he'd be on the active roster helping you win football games.
That is exactly right. You have to think about that. When they don't have to notify you. I mean, they have to notify you and let you know that, because once a guy comes out to practice squad, that guy was a valuable part of your team, even though he's not playing, because he's in practice giving looks, doing all the scouts, doing all everything you need done. So if they're going to sign a guy off your practice squad, that gives you a chance to go out and find a guy to bring back on, because you need that guy in practice.
Yeah, because I was just thinking that, you know, we do have a few positions that are going to involve some real tough decisions, but, you know, like if they have to notify you and give you the first chance to sign the guy, that could absolutely affect who you decide to put on the practice squad. Because if you know you can keep someone for sure and have them safe on the practice squad once they clear waivers, you know, that might affect your decision making for one season.
No, I think more, you know, some teams will do this, probably not the Giants, but some teams will do this. That player that you're talking about would have that phantom hamstring injury, and he would be on IR for the year. It wouldn't be a practice squad thing, because there's not much you can do about practice squad. If it's time to pick a guy, if a guy gets picked up, you know, God bless him, first off, you get an opportunity to play. And number two, you're just hoping that you can find a guy that can come in and take his place in that position.
And, Chris, remember this. Even if a team did have a chance to, you know, quote-unquote match, you know, what you're talking about and bring the guy into their own active roster, you still have to cut one of your own guys in order to move him from the practice squad onto your active roster. So that would still be a fairly significant roster move if you want to, you know, quote-unquote save a guy in the way you're talking about.
Okay, yeah, because, like, for example – If you feel that Jeremy Davis isn't quite ready for this year but has a bright future, And you know that once he gets to the practice squad, he's safe. You know, you could have James Jones for now, and then if you are forced to either sign Davis or let him go somewhere, that you might want to say just for your long term, all right, cut Jones and then sign Davis to the active roster.
Well, you know, Christian,
just as an example.
Right. No, I hear you, and thanks a lot for the call, pal. We appreciate it. The other thing too with the practice squad is that usually, you know, it's not that common for a team to go to somebody else's practice squad and take somebody off of it. It's not the most common thing in the world. Because
I think the Giants and Jets do it to each other all the time because there's not a lot of travel in that one.
Because I think the deal is once you have your guys on your practice squad, like Howard said, these guys are in practice. They're mm-hmm. learning your system. They're ready to go. You pull a guy off somebody else's practice squad, you're bringing a guy and you have to put him in all your remedial classes before he can go in there and, you know, do the real thing for you if you need him. And now, granted, the practice squad is you're asking them to almost play the roles of other teams, so it doesn't really apply and things like that. But, you know, generally teams don't go around, you know, poaching guys. If they're going to take a guy, they're going to take him off waivers when you put him onto the practice squad. That's when they're in the most danger of being claimed by another team.
Yeah, yes and no. When a guy, because what happens is, let's say everybody's team set, then they're practice squad guys.
Yes.
You're three games into the season, all of a sudden you get a guy that's hurt, right? And there's a guy that you liked,
and that's the exception.
Yeah, there was a guy that you liked out there.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, we got to bring that guy in for a workout and put him on the team.
201-939-451. Every time we could find a list of a couple guys that Giants have claimed up other teams' practice squads over the years. There's been a few. I'll try to pull a list so we can get an idea for what
goodness.
Guys the Giants have done. It's not
I remember.
To find.
It's come, if you do that, it's going to be impressive.
I think I have a couple names in mind, but I want to double-check that they're accurate before I start spouting. All right, let's go to Howard's home state of Alabama and
roll
say what's
time,
up to
baby,
Johnson.
Roll.
How are you, Johnson?
Hello, how are you doing?
Very good.
Hi, right, I'd like to talk about the running game.
Go ahead.
I was kind of bummed in the offseason when the Giants didn't pick up DeMarco Murray. I really thought that was a shot there.
I think that you're going to be shocked at DeMarco Murray at Philadelphia. I think everybody's kind of excited about DeMarco Murray and how he's going to play and how good he's going to look.
I think he's going to play garbage because they need that line.
Yes, I think that that's going to be the first thing you're going to notice. The Dallas' lines are one of the top lines in the NFL. They look good. They're fast. They're big. They get a lot of things done. I think when he goes to Philadelphia, everybody kind of forgets that McCoy made people miss in the backfield, and he was gone. I don't see DeMarco Murray making people miss that often in the backfield. He's going to have a hard time. Hopefully he doesn't get hurt because there's going to be a lot more contact.
If he does, Rose is the man to go to.
Well, there's going to be whatever they go to. The guy's going to have to be a magician.
They got Sproles, and they got Ryan Matthews, too. So they have a big stable down there.
Ryan Matthews is trash.
Oh, he's not trash. He rushed for 1,000 yards a couple years ago.
Like I said, just you're going to see a big difference in it. And if the Giants pick up DeMarco Murray, he's not dodging guys in the backfield. We need a guy who's going to be a hard runner, be able to get off the first, get up there between the tackles and carry the ball. It's not one of those things that you're going to get where you're going to get a guy that's going to bounce outside and make a lot of plays. Giants need a hard-nosed runner because right now the way we're configured, or the way the team's configured, you need a guy that can do that. They're not getting to the edge a lot on runs. They're coming up the middle. And if a guy's going to be up the middle, you need a big-body, strong guy like Jennings.
Yeah.
Yeah, anything else for us, Johnson?
Yeah, I'd like to talk about what was his name, Colby? What he said about Jordy Nelson?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I don't know what he's talking about, man. That's, like, not a good thing to do.
In terms of trying to trade James Jones, you're talking about?
Yeah, for Jordy Nelson.
No, he didn't want to trade James Jones for Jordy Nelson. He said the Packers would want James Jones because they lost Jordy Nelson, and maybe you can get a draft pick.
People.
Well, I agree. That's exactly what we said, Johnson. I appreciate
the call,
bud. Thank you. And by the way, two guys I thought the Giants did claim off other teams' practice squads last year, they actually did, but I want to check it before I looked it up. Orleans Darkwa,
yep,
they got off
true.
The Dolphins' practice squad, which I thought they had. I wanted to double-check that the Dolphins hadn't just released him mm-hmm. before the Giants got him. They also signed cornerback Mike Harris
off
the Lions' practice squad last
that's
year.
Right.
So those are two guys I thought they had, but I want to check before I put them out
there.
They
had two guys the other years before, too, but I forget their names.
But so it does happen.
It happens a lot.
So guys are not safe. And there is a – and I thought this was a rule too, and I just double-checked it, and it was. If you sign a guy off another team's practice squad, he has to be on your active roster for 3 games.
Yes.
Which is right. which is why in the end, it's more common to claim a guy off waivers, because then – I don't think that requirement is there if you claim the guy off waivers. But if you get him off a practice squad, he has to be on your roster for 3 games, which makes it more of a commitment to go grab a guy off somebody else's practice squad.
Yes and no. But you have to think about this. If you sign a guy off another team's practice squad, it's because it's necessity. He's going to be there for 3 games. Right. He's going to be there for as many games as you can get him on for. And that's the thing that people don't realize. And then I understand the questions and what they're trying to put together, but – If the Giants need a safety at the end of this whole debacle of injuries, they're going to go sign somebody. That guy's going to wind up playing for the team. And it's not going to just be 3 games. He's going to probably play half the season, if not more. And that's what you have to look for, and that's what you're looking at when you're trying to sign a guy off your practice squad.
Brandon in New Jersey, you're up next. Brandon, what's up?
Yeah, what's going on, man?
How are you, B?
Hey, man.
Yeah, I didn't know James Jones was on the trading block. He on the trading block?
No, he's not on the trading block. And that's what we said earlier. Giant fans, and I've seen this all over Twitter, and I'm not surprised we got the call today, that Giant fans have it in their heads that the Packers are so desperate that they lost Jordy Nelson that they're going to throw the house at the Giants to get back James Jones.
I think we would like them to.
Quite frankly. But quite frankly, I think James Jones can be a useful player for the Giants. I think he can be very helpful as a wide receiver, especially with Randall dealing with the bad knees right now.
Well,
I was just about to say that, and Preston Parkin dropping all these balls. And I don't understand why they don't get Corey Washington in there with the ones more.
He wasn't the ones last night. Corey Washington was with the ones the entire first quarter. He was on the field with Eli Manning all day long in the first quarter of that game on Saturday.
I seen him on the field, but he ain't getting no catches or nothing
He did not. That is correct.
Another thing I wanted to say was they need to keep Jeff Schwartz in there. I believe John Jerry is a backup, man. That right side, you need to keep Schwartz in that right guard and him in Newhouse at the right tackle spot.
If Schwartz is healthy, he's going to play, Brandon.
I know they're trying to ease Schwartz back in easily, but he needs the reps, yo, so he could be ready for Dallas. Because I'm pretty sure the set five is going to be that five right there with Schwartz in that right guard. What you think?
I think it probably will be, but I think people don't realize that Schwartz was really injured last year. I think people probably think, like, oh, he's soft or that's something that he didn't really want to play.
Dislocated ankle.
Yeah, he wasn't in a good way last year. So, thank God he's healthy for him, him personally. Forget about the Giants, just him personally. Dislocated ankle on a guy that size is not an easy thing to overcome, and he's coming back. So I don't think they're going to throw him into the Wolves all at once. They're trying to play him. Take him out, check his ankle. Let's see what you got. Is there any swelling? Is there any soreness? Okay, you look good. Let's give you a little bit more next game. And then the last preseason game, they'll take him out completely and have him running and get himself ready, because when he goes from playing against guys that are, trying to get through the preseason, trying to make the team, then when you go to Dallas the first week, those guys are on the team and they're trying to get to the Super Bowl. So you got to be prepared for that. And it's not something like when these injuries happen to guys, as fans, we see them. We're like, okay, well, come on back. Let's go. Your body just doesn't do that. You don't replace one thing and come back and get there.
All right, I got two more calls. I'm going to take these two calls.
One more thing.
Yeah, sure, Brandon.
The guy, Unger, he's going to be something. Yo, they need to keep their eyes on him. The linebacker.
Oh, yeah, he's a good player.
JT Thomas?
No, Unger.
Unger
shows up a lot. He shows up in a lot of places.
They need to keep their eyes on him. He could be a future middle linebacker, man.
He's a good player.
I don't know about the future middle linebacker, because I know Kennard probably going to take over that spot, but he could fill in well for Beeson if he can't be in the opener for Dallas, I believe.
All right, Brandon. Appreciate it, man. Thanks, pal. And look, Unger's showing up the first two games.
Like I said about DeMontre Moore, you want to see a guy that's in the camera, getting up out of the pile, going somewhere every play. Unger does that. he's in every pile.
I mean, he's a guy, too, that he lost his last year in college because of injury. He didn't play football last year, so he's almost coming off of 2 years now of not playing. So for him to come in and really not miss a beat this early, it's pretty impressive.
Well, it's impressive, but you also got to remember he was probably a higher round draft pick if he had been healthy the entire time.
Oh, correct. Exactly, right.
You're getting a guy. You're getting the benefit of having a guy. Like, they got, again, I keep calling this guy a thing. I hate that. I keep doing it. It's like Mecklenburger, the first round pick that gets hurt The only guy that really got hurt and was still a first-round pick is Gurley.
Yeah.
Yeah, he, you know, top 10 pick.
And he might not even be ready for the first week now.
Yeah, I don't think he's not going to be ready to like week four.
They might pop him, actually. They might pop him.
I would pop him.
I mean, Trey Mason's a good player. I mean,
I would, but
he's a Todd Gurley now. No, but he's a good player.
I'd rather have Todd Gurley for 8 games than I would for to have him for, you know, 16 games and then ruin what I drafted.
And right. And that means you have him at full strength then for. Yeah. Years rest, 2, 3, 4, 5,
absolutely.
And 100%. You don't want to do what the Redskins did with, you know, Robert Griffin III, where you bring him back too early, and then all of a sudden the guy's running around like he's Trey Aikman, not like he's Robert Griffin III.
He's beat up.
Exactly. All right, 2 more calls, and I got a lot of tweets for Howard I want to get to as well. Let's go to Chris in New Jersey. Chris, what's going on?
Hey, all right, John. Thanks, John and Howard. Hey, couple quick points. You know, with all these creative situations with Eli when callers call up, I mean, Eli's going to get the appreciation when he finally retires. I mean, that's when people are going to realize what they got in this guy. I mean, look, like you mentioned before with the Bills, J.P. Lossman, that was another guy.
Ah, Lossman, I mean, that was the other guy. Right? Thank you.
Yeah, the Bills, Browns, I mean, these teams have had number one picks for a number of years. I mean, you're just not going to find
Brandon
a guy
Weeden.
Like Eli or an Aaron Rodgers, or Andrew Luck. These guys don't come along every day.
No.
You know
Absolutely.
What you get with Eli. You know what you get, and that's the bottom line.
Hey, Chris, it's funny. It's funny you mention it, and you're right. They'll appreciate Eli more when he's retired. Just think of Knicks fans with Patrick Ewing. They couldn't help get Ewing out of town
thing,
fast
exactly.
enough at the end of his career. And everyone's like, oh, I wish we had Patrick Ewing again. It's the same exact thing.
It's everywhere.
That's right. The only difference is Eli has 2 titles. Patrick unfortunately didn't have a surround
that
group
is fair.
Around him. You know, another call for another
Patrick's
day. But
not
you know.
Listening, man.
I love Patrick. Patrick's my guy,
but,
man.
Quick point with the injuries, guys. Because it's preseason. If this was regular season, would some of these guys be more apt to play next week? Obviously, we're going to sit them down. But are the injuries exaggerated because it is preseason and they're not as bad as maybe we make them out to be because it is preseason?
You mean quantity of injuries?
No, he's
just the type.
About...
Like Beeson, they're saying, you know, he'll hopefully be ready for the Dallas game.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Let's say they had a game in 10 days, less than, you know, let's say in a week, a regular season game next week. Would his status be a little more upgraded because it would have been a regular season game versus a preseason game?
I won't go with Beeson because Beeson's a veteran and he's, you know, he does what he has to do.
How about Landon Collins, for
like
example.
Landon Collins, I won't go with Landon Collins because he's going to be a starting safety. But all these other guys that you see that are trying to make the team, and I do mean trying to make the team, they're seriously injured. So that's nothing we can do about that. The breaks, the tears, the pulls,
right. They're
all out. There'll be some guys that will be like, you know, take a week or two off of camp if they're already in and they're already okay. But most of the time, in this day and age, you got to know if a guy's hurt, a guy's hurt.
Now, Chris, for example, Prince said last week, and he practiced, I think, 2 days before the game against the Jaguars. Mm-hmm. He said if it was the regular season, he would have played. So,
Reuben Randle will be your best example.
That's
Randle
has, also, yeah.
He has tendonitis in his knee. They have to try to quiet that down. They don't have a choice.
Quiet it now so it's better later.
Yeah, so if he had to play, he could play. But if he does play, what part of him are you going to get for the full season? You don't want that. You want the best of him for most of the season.
Right, right. Well, and one last point, guys.
Yeah.
I didn't listen to the beginning of the show, but one guy that I'm really high on is this, and probably because he was with the Jaguars, so he, you know, was under the radar. But JT Thomas.
Yes,
I think he played very well, and he can cover out of the backfield. And I think he's a guy that, you know, we're gonna see something from this year that nobody really expected.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
We gave JT a lot of love already.
Off the top, and JT played a heck of a game there. Got in the backfield, knocked the ball away from the quarterback, forcing turnover. So you always like to see that. Final call, another wow. The Alabama folk just
come out for
Howard. Jim in Alabama's up next. Jim, what's going on?
Hey, Roll Tide.
Roll Tide.
2 encouraging plays for me. Anansi catching a pass. And Shane Vereen making a long run because it shows balance. I think the best way to get balance is when you can put a tight end like Howard on the field who can both block and run a route. And so the defense doesn't know whether they're going to get smacked in the mouth. That same linebacker is going to get smacked in the mouth or he's going to get run past.
Yeah, unfortunately, Jim, there aren't that many tight ends out there anymore that do both. They're a dying breed, man. There aren't a lot of them.
Well, you know.
I know.
They're
so hard to find. But if you can't find a tight end that can do that, you can find a fullback that can smack a guy in the mouth or catch a pass in the flat.
Not a lot of those anymore either.
There's not, but I think Heinonski's that guy. In 2011, he caught a lot of footballs. So a lot of football, and he didn't catch any last year. I think that shows balance in the offense. Same thing with Shane Vereen is coming in, and I think the defense is thinking, hey, we're going to pass. He's going to run a route. And instead, he runs a 10-plus yard run. That means the defense can't substitute to try to match up on personnel. I just would like to think to get Howard's comments on that line of thinking, if that's the kind of thing that the Giants are doing this year. And I'll take the call off the air. Thanks, guys.
Well, I appreciate it.
I will reference it with a Coach Saban expression that I just heard him talk about just recently. Coach Saban says he's recruiting more guys to be football players. He's trying to get away from the specialists. He said the specialist was something he learned in the NFL, where guys like a Shane Vereen is more of a pass guy, where Hanowski's more of a run guy. He may catch a couple passes. And the tight end position is like you got the Jimmy Grahams of the world, and you got the other big guys. You don't even know their names because they don't catch the ball that often. And he said that, you know, the league's changing. We can't substitute anymore on defense. You can't change enough because they're going so fast. So in the pros, they're going to move towards that themselves. They're going to find a way to get guys that can do a little bit of both. If a team's a pure passing team, which a lot of teams are going to, that quote-unquote spread formation, that's what they want to run out of. It's going back to the days of Barry Sanders and the run and shoot. Now they don't call it the run and shoot. It's called spread.
Spread, right.
But that's the one thing the guys want. But you'll see, you know, we have a team full of tight ends. We have a team full of tight ends that, they're, you know, Fells is a good block. But then it kind of tapers off after his name. Every name gets a little less in the blocking scenario. And it's because every name after Fells is a receiver. The better the receiver, the less he blocks. And you just can't find guys that are willing to do both.
There aren't many Jason Wittens running around
there. They're just not. They're just not guys that are –
No, Mark Bavaros, no Howard Crosses.
They're just not a commitment to it. But, you know, back – and again, Witten, myself, Bavaro, anybody you want to name, we were committed to the run.
Yeah.
And by being committed to the run, our responsibility, if we want to get on the field, we had to block people. And that's what made the big difference.
All right, let's get to some tweets here. Howard's got a lot of them coming in. I got a couple of people like Unga. We already talked about him. At Easy BKNY, when JPP, whenever he gets back, you think he starts off as a rotational player, Howard, or is he going to go right in and play all the snaps he played last year?
I don't want to burst anybody's bubble with the whole JPP thing, but until someone can tell me he's healthy, I would stop asking about JPP.
I think that's a good answer.
I think that you got to like really take it for what it is. We have a guy with a real serious injury to his hand. You're overlooking possible nerve damage. You're overlooking possible whatever. I don't know. I have no idea what it is. I'm not a doctor. Couldn't even tell you. But if it's bad enough to keep him away from his team and his team doctors, who are some of the best doctors in the country, maybe the world, I would just, you know, keep it quiet on that for a little bit.
All right, let's see what else we got here. And one of our good followers here, Hanowski, caught 12 passes in 2011.
Yes,
so.
That's pretty accurate, though. 11, that's not bad.
He wasn't quite exactly Keith Byers out of the backfield that year. I'm dating myself with my Keith Byers reference. Yeah, but he was an excellent pass-catching fullback.
Should have won the Heisman.
Seriously?
Yeah, they gave it to Flutie that year.
Oh.
If you look up his stats.
What did Byers do the year he should have won the Heisman?
Everything. He was really super dominant, and they gave it to Flutie for the pass against Miami.
Is Byers an Alabama guy?
No, he's an Ohio State guy.
He's an Ohio State guy?
And I say that, that pains me to say that.
I was going to say, I assumed he was an Alabama guy since he thought he should have won the Heisman. Howard finds an Alabama guy every year that should have won the Heisman.
Not every year.
Let me think. How about this? As a former player, your thoughts on the Chris Carter remarks that got put out there by the NFL today?
What did Chris Carter say? No, I don't really listen to Chris.
Okay, you know what? I'm not even going to worry about it.
No, tell me.
Don't worry about it. Let's see. Pugh and Flowers, what do you think them as a combination on the left side of the offensive line?
I think it's going to be the Giants' dominant side for the run this year. I think they work well together. Pugh works well with just about anybody, and Flowers has came in, and he's accepted the role of left tackle, which I thought was going to be tough for him, and it's not at all, and Pugh's helping him right through it.
Your thoughts on Orleans Darkwa?
Orleans Darkwa.
That's from Roger Greco.
I think Orleans Darkwa is the pleasant surprise, but someone did a really good job of scouting this kid. I think people thought that he was going to come in here and be a special teams guy, and he's not just a special teams guy. He can actually tote the rock. He's explosive. He has great vision, which is something that you love to see in your back, and he knows how to hit that hole, and when he does, he hits it at full speed.
No question. And Howard, by the way, will be with us all season long, one day a week. Today he's here doing our TV show. So we'll have Deal one day, Howard one day, Feagles a day or two. So we'll have a nice mix of folks here over the course of the year. And Howard will be with us all week long because you can check him out on Giants Training Camp Live, which comes your way at night, 6 o'clock on MSG Networks. He'll be with us all week this week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Make sure you check it out. Of course, stay tuned to Giants.com for continuing coverage of training camp. There is no practice today, but there will be practice Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday as the Giants get ready for what everyone calls the dress rehearsal game against the New York Jets on Saturday night. And real quick, Harry, we got 1 minute to go here. Did you get more pumped up for the Jets game? Is that real or is that fake from the media?
It's real. You know, the media doesn't really realize that you see these guys at a lot of different events all year long.
So it's a pride thing.
Yeah, it's definitely a pride thing. You don't want your buddies to beat you. And you get to know these guys really, you know.
Now, do you think it's still that way, though?
I think it is more. Oh, man, I see brick somewhere. You'll see half of their defense sometimes at events. You see half Giants, half Jets, you know. Promotional companies around the area know that these guys are accessible, so bring them out.
All right. Howard, appreciate it. Yep. He'll be back with you tomorrow, 12:30, Big Blue Kickoff Live for Howard Cross. I'm John Schmoke. Thank you for joining us. Great job on the phones. Great job on Twitter. We'll see you tomorrow. And, of course, check out Howard tonight, 6 o'clock, MSG Networks, Giants Training Camp Live.
Well, here we go, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go, let's go.
Down the middle of the field, he's got through! 35, 30!